on the grounds at EAA Air Venture. You're back now on EAA Radio Live.
And we're at the Welcome Center. I'm Fareed Ghia with EAA Radio Live. We're talking with Rear Admiral Patrick McGrath, United States Navy, and Major General John Crowley of the United States Marine Corps. How's it going for you guys so far?
Well, this is the first time I've been here, and I've been walking around with a smile on my face for 2 days, so it's going pretty good.
And let's talk a little bit about more in what both of you have flown the most, and that is helicopters. What has the helicopter meant to the seaborne forces of the United States military?
Well, I'll talk about I was a Navy frigate and destroyer guy, so I would fly a helicopter off the back end of the ship. And what I have found is that we are kind of the jack of all trades and master of quite a few of them. In the beginning, when we started doing things, an awful lot of what we do is it's just kind of day-to-day moving parts, moving mail. But in particular, I mentioned that I would chase Soviet Union submarines. The mental gymnastics of doing three-dimensional chess, flying a helicopter in the air, thinking about what's going on in the water, and trying to outthink a submarine skipper while they go through their paces is something that I found massively challenging. And again, when I talked about moving the horizon for a battle group, if you want to fight a submarine, you want to fight it 30 miles or 60 miles away from the ship. You don't want to be fighting it from the ship. So again, what we were able to do is just project that horizon, and we can do that with radar, and now with armed helicopters, we can also project that kinetic power away from the ship, because the ship is the base, and that's the high-value unit we're trying to protect. And so that's what helicopters have added to that fight.
General Crowley?
Yes. You've seen quite an evolution of a helicopter warfare here over the past 10 years. Right now, in the United States Marine Corps, we've had the you've seen the initial stages of 2001. Several helicopter platforms were from Vietnam, the CH-53 D model, the CH-46 C-Night helicopter, and we've begun through a very wise investment and the investment of the American taxpayer, who we so certainly do not forget, in the V-22 Osprey and the new CH-53 E and the Kilo. The Kilo will come to us very shortly. But these engagements and counterinsurgency operations over the past 10 years have been extremely helicopter intensive, especially when you're looking at altitudes up to 9,000-10,000 feet of inserting special operations forces to do that kind of combat. The kinds of technology that's required. I'm an attack helicopter pilot for laser designating various precision-guided munitions and buddy lasing, having a lasing for another weapons system that might be 10, 12, 15, 20 miles away, releasing a weapon and going to a very precise target, shooting through a window, et cetera, through that kind of engagement and all kinds of weather. So that is total weapons systems is what we're talking about in regards to that, and we've come a long way. You look today, casualties on the battlefield, the utility that a rotary wing platform gives you today, and we're on the verge of accelerating that. You look at the Boeing presentation, Bell Boeing presentation of the MV-22, the Osprey. You haven't heard anything out there in the press about it. Well, that's because it's working. The MV-22 is on its sixth combat tour. Usually they spend 7 months in theater, be Afghanistan or and no longer Iraq, thank God. And that's proceeding very well. You look at the capability that the MV-22 Osprey gives out there in the battle space. I can give you I can draw a picture for you. You took the battle space the size of California, that's Iraq, and with the agility and the velocity of the MV-22 Osprey, it condensed that battle space to the size of Rhode Island. And that saves lives, that speeds logistics, that allows forces to engage on the ground much more rapidly than they could have in the past. And that is American technology. That platform is being built out there in Amarillo, Texas today. And that is a success story.
Let's talk about, you were mentioned about you chased submarines. Walk us through how you would find a submarine in as far as tactically.
Well, here's an interesting thing is if you put a microphone in the I'll give an example. We're in a room right now and there are people that are chatting in the background. And the question is, in all of that noise, if you want to find a particular noise, how do you do that? What we would do is we would study the noises that a submarine would put out. And we had these buoys, and they were sonar buoys, and they're essentially microphones. And we would drop them in the water in geometric patterns. And we would listen for the particular frequencies that a submarine put out. You think of a reciprocating engine, a propeller that's moving, a certain pump operates at a certain speed. And we would actually plot those frequencies. And if you drop a microphone in the ocean somewhere, there are snapping shrimp. There are whale noises. But those are all transient short noises. What you're looking for is a man-made noise, which is a standard, a specific frequency that operates on a regular basis. And what we would do is we would sort out the background noise for the specific noise, and then we would narrow down the area until we would get to the point where we could, if we had to, actually attack it.
Now, obviously, it's still mostly audio-based. You're trying to hear that. Are there any other technologies that are used also as well?
Well, we had a piece of gear called magnetic anomaly detector. And if you think of, remember when you were doing projects in school, a piece of metal will cause a disruption in a magnetic field. When you think of a piece of metal the size of a submarine, we would fly over with a metal detector, literally. And again, you can't do this open ocean search, just hope to find it. But once you've figured out where the area is, we would sweep the ocean where we think it is with this metal detector hung 200 feet below us, and that would help us narrow down, pinpoint exactly where the submarine is.
What has changed in covering the ocean as far as patrolling? How much does the Navy patrol the ocean, or is it all very targeted in how these task forces are moved around?
Well, I guess it depends on the mission. But again, if we go back, since we're talking history, originally, you know, Nelson at Trafalgar had a ship and some guy standing on a post going over there. Then you add an aircraft that can fly 100 miles. Then you add radar. Then you end now unmanned aerial vehicles, satellites. It's all about knowing what's there. So when you add a satellite, you think of what's going on overseas and with predators and with raptors. So you can have an unmanned aerial vehicle in the air for 12 hours. What this is all about is knowledge of the battle space, knowledge of what is ahead of you. And when we add the information we can get from satellites, with radar, and with human sight, we can extend our horizon, extend our knowledge of not only in wartime, but essentially of where you're going and what's ahead of you.
We'll be back in just a few moments, a little more talk about naval aviation. And we're live from the Welcome Center on EA Radio Live.